Hi, this is Paul Jindrzejak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined in the studio by singer-songwriter-musician Ralston Bowles. How are you doing today, Ralston?
Pretty good there, Paul. How are you doing?
Hey, fantastic. So, 2004, you released your first album, Car Wreck Conversations, and you were about 50 at the time, but you'd been recording, or you'd been doing music quite a bit before that. Why only then when you recorded your first?
Well, I enjoyed the live music thing more than I did recording and that whole concept. I guess I was a little bit nervous of putting something down and having it be that way forever. But in meeting up with Marvin Etzioni, who was the guy that produced the first record, he got a hold of a tape and heard couple songs, and one particular song, What About Me, that he really latched onto and wanted to produce. So he said, you know, come out and see me in L.A. and you can stay at my place and record this this album. I'd like to at least, you know, get this song done and see what else you got. So I went to his place. We sat for a couple hours as I played through a bunch of songs for him, and he was just making notes. At the end of it, he says, I think we got a record. And we went out to the studio in Thousand Oaks, and a friend of his, David Vaught, did some engineering. He brought in a few other musicians, and at the end of a week, I had an album.
So what was that experience like for you?
Well, it was a little strange, but he was very good about making it so that I was not so nervous, and he kind of gave me the concept. He says, you got to just look at this as being a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
It's what was taken at the time. That's where you were at the time. You go back and you look at an album of photographs. They're not really anything like what you may look like now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were to take the picture now with the same clothes on and in the same place, even you get an entire different look.
Mm-hmm.
The way the light hits you, just the way you look, the way the clothes fit, all those things. So you just got to look at it as this is a moment in time and just move on from there.
So how is it when you look back at that now, or you look back at your other albums you released, do you view them differently? What are your thoughts and feelings on the songs? You feel that you know, being that you're down the road a bit, would have changed some things up? And do you change things up on stage quite a bit?
Well, I think every time I play certain songs, they probably come out a different way. If I'd have probably done them, you know, two or three times that day when we recorded them, it probably would have been different. And that's the thing he was trying to get across to me, I think, is that each time there's a certain vibrancy, there's a certain life in each experience as you're performing. And so you'll get different things each time.
So sometimes does the meaning of the song change for you? Something that you maybe put out 4 or 5 years ago when you're performing it on stage maybe takes on a different meaning for you, perhaps?
Well, you know, some of the songs actually were written way before the album was made. There were songs that I had been carrying around.
Okay.
And they just kind of bouncing around in my pocket for years. And then as they took on a life in a studio with other people bringing what their parts were to it.
Sure.
And how they interpreted it, and it was an interesting way to hear the songs. It took on a new life for me. I don't produce them, or I mean, I don't replicate them on stage the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They did allow me to see another way of performing, or maybe delivering them in a different way sometimes with
mm-hmm.
The phrasing and things like that. But by the time I had reached the studio, I'd already figured out how I wanted to kind of phrase things.
Okay.
And they came out that way, and I think the guys that played on the record wound up filling in around those kinds of expressions in a way that really supported the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, your father was also a musician. Was it him who first got you interested in music?
You know, you kind of grew up around the fact that there were a lot of instruments around the house. He was from the hills of West Virginia, and we would spend summers, you know, down there with a lot of my aunts and uncles and cousins, and they were all players, and it was very reminiscent of what you'd see in some of the old films. And, you know, you kind of get out on the porch and you just let the music kick through the hollers, you know.
So what instruments was he playing?
He could play just about anything with strings on it, I swear. I mean, I did not inherit his abilities to to pick up anything with strings, but he had mandolins and guitars. He was also a fiddle player.
Mm-hmm.
One of his nicknames over the years was Fiddlin' Clyde.
Okay.
I have no idea why they came up with that, but I guess it was a character that somebody might have known, and he had that as a moniker for a while.
Now, what was the first instrument you picked up?
Well, I was taking one of his guitars when I was quite young and hauling it up on the couch with my lap and laying it across my lap and almost playing it like a laptop dulcimer.
Okay.
And I would strum it back and forth. And when I got a hold of a pick one time, and I put some pretty nice nicks on the face of that guitar.
Did you get in trouble?
I say my dad was not the happiest camper on their block that night, and neither was I later on. So. But I think he totally got it, and it made me realize that the importance of just having a knock-around guitar, something that would be out on the floor. So I left one out on my floor as my kids have grown up and grown around, you know, that they could knock onto and do different things with.
Sure. Now, who was it that also shaped you musically once you got playing a little bit more and became a little bit more proficient?
Well, actually, I mean, I guess my first attraction to the whole concept of music and performance and stuff goes back to my elementary school. I had a music teacher who was very encouraging, a guy by the name of Mr. Adamczyk, and he was also the art teacher.
Okay.
And he encouraged the whole musical aspect. He saw some things, and then when I got into middle school, I think it was he who passed my name along to one of the drama instructors that were looking to put together a musical. And I was a boy soprano at the time, and they were looking for somebody that needed to do a little libretto that they were working on called A Mall and the Night Visitors.
Okay.
And that was one of my first actual theater performances. And so from that, I guess, you know, he kind of encouraged me. And then I wound up with the theater interest because of that experience and another musical, a choral director that I met in high school. And that gave me my first taste of going to Europe because our choir did a European tour with Vivaldi's Gloria.
Very cool.
We got to go to a number of the cathedrals in Amsterdam and in Belgium and Germany and France. And that was the bug that bit me for
sure.
Wanting to travel all the more, I think. I was over there. I think I was like 15, 14 or 15.
So what were some of the places that you spent time there?
Well, we were in Amsterdam. We played in the Oude Kerk in the center of town there, which was actually in the center of the red light district.
Wow.
I guess for a lot of the high school kids, you know, we gave our folks that were kind of chaperones a run for their money. But and then we went into Germany, and I was in Paris, and you know, all the major stops along the way, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But a couple busloads of high school kids rolling through Europe at the time,
getting
their first taste of wine. And I remember sitting at the table. They brought this carafe. The only time I saw a carafe they brought was clear. It looked a little. There was a little bit of a tint to it, but mm-hmm. I thought maybe it was part of it was because of the white, because of the lighting in the restaurant, and another part of it could have been because, you know, I understood that water
right.
was not the cleanest sometimes in other places. In fact, they told us not to drink the water.
Sure,
but I didn't really realize it was white wine until I got a glass of it.
Did you take a liking to it?
It wasn't that great, but
it
wasn't what I was expecting. It was a little bit of a bite to it, and but at our table, we were far enough away from the chaperones. We figured, well, we're going to try to get as much of this carafe down as we possibly can before they find out that we weren't supposed to have it, I guess, because they started collecting them all off the
okay.
table. Over there, it's no big deal. It's just served
right.
with a meal.
Right,
you know?
Right,
so,
right.
I don't know. Sometimes I think we put restrictions on things.
Lots more taboos.
Yeah, it makes it much more of that thing where, like, people want to discover it or go against it. So
what you can't have, you want even more.
Yeah, so I think it was a little over the top, but
sure,
it didn't make me a wino.
No, you know? Well, that's good. So what records were you listening to growing up? What was around the house?
Oh, well, let's see. I listened to Johnny Horton, and I listened to Tex Ritter, and little Jimmy Dickens, and listening to a bunch of the stuff, you know, coming out of Nashville back in the day. Some of the Skeeter Davis.
Okay.
You know.
So you feel that kind of helped shape you in the music
direction?
I
wasn't that big into too much of it at the time, because it was sort of what my folks my dad and my cousins and stuff were into. And to me, it was more, it was like hill music. You know?
Okay.
It was hick music.
Gotcha.
And I wasn't into that too much. But so I was looking more for the, I don't know, when the rock thing started to hit a little bit more, that took more of an interest to me.
So who was the first rock band that really grabbed you?
You know, I kind of got ushered into it through things like The Association.
Okay.
And I do remember when the Beatles hit. So
Ed Sullivan Show?
That's certainly... Yes, I actually was over at a friend's house. A bunch of us got together, and we kind of had a watch party, because the word was out that they were going to be on.
Right.
You know, there was a big buzz on the streets. It was pre-Twitter, but there was still quite a bit of a buzz that would travel word of mouth.
Well, you didn't have everything you had today. I mean, as far as Facebook, Twitter, and all that, you had to rely on, mainstream media and things. Word didn't travel as quickly as it did.
No, but it seemed to get around. I mean, I was you look back at it now and you just go, how did it work? But it did work.
Right, right. So were you into the Stones next?
I did like the Stones. I thought they were kind of... initially, there were a lot of these groups that started showing up. And
right.
They all were, growing their hair out. And,
sure.
And talking funny. And
everybody wanted to be British.
Yeah, everybody was... all this British invasion thing. I found that I liked a lot of the Canadian bands. I was really enjoying things that were coming out of Canada. I mean, mm-hmm. the Neil Youngs and the Joni Mitchells and, the band, things like that.
Right, right.